Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The Staff and Graf Podcast.
This is weird. My lock's been drilled, so I open the door and my steering wheel is missing.
In links or salad?
You know what? You're trying very hard not to get sued.
You can have all the talent in the world skating around, but if you don't have a goaltender, it does not matter.
Team Tidy Business, baby.
All right, great, great start to the show. I just booted my laptop.
Knocked over my Lego tree, the water, the chocolate.
Everything's going great. You know, hashtag Monday vibes. Hashtag thank God it's Monday. Let me move that light over here as well a little bit. Anyway, here we are, Rachel, recording a podcast. It is snowing. It's March 18th. Things are weird.
I'm annoyed that it's snowing.
I'm overjoyed, really, that it's snowing because I love the cold and I love winter, and we got precisely zero of it this winter. However,
my thing with this is, like, if it's gonna snow, it better snow enough for me to be able to ski. Mm-hmm. I can't ski, so get out of here. That's my feelings on it. I didn't get to go skiing once this winter here.
Look, if we have any listeners out there whose families own ski hills or
ski chalets
or if whose families make money off the sport of skiing, please let us know, because I this whole time I've been stressed out about snowplowers and sort of anyone who's economy is involved with skiing, because boy oh boy, it's been a rough winter for them. Anyway, Rachel, we talked a bit on the last show about the Buffalo Sabres, how they're making a charge up the standings, a late season charge. They got Bo and Byram. Things are going well. They had a crucial weekend ahead of them this weekend. They were playing the Island. They were behind the Islanders and the Red Wings in the fight. The fight for the final wild card spot. And guess who they played? The Islanders and the Red Wings.
And we said those were must win games for them.
And they won one of them. They beat the Islanders,
who then proceeded to lose to the Rangers.
Yeah. So things are interesting, but they did end up losing to the Red Wings on Sunday.
Win in nine games.
Yeah. They snapped the Red Wings, I believe, 9-game winless streak, which is pretty nuts. They are now 5 points back of the final wild card spot. Was that loss to Detroit kind of the nail in the coffin?
I don't think so, because I don't think Detroit's making the playoffs. I think it's between them and New York. And
the Islanders, you mean?
Yeah. Detroit looks terrible. And if they're not going to get Dylan Larkin back, it's going to be a problem. If Detroit gets Larkin back, I think it's a different conversation. But without Larkin, it's a major issue. I mean, we've seen the Wings. Like, Dylan Larkin has an argument for the Hart Trophy because the Wings were in the playoffs with him and have won one of their last 10 without. Yeah. So that's crazy.
A big reason is that Alex DeBrincat, in his last 48 games, I'm not sure if you saw this stat on Twitter, in his last 48 games has scored 4 even strength goals.
Yeah, I wrote a piece for our former employer at the beginning of the year. It was like at the end of October, I wrote a piece on how, like, DeBrincat was having a hot start, but that this was not sustainable.
Like, and a house of cards,
In the same way that, like, I said Kuzmenko is the player most primed for regression this season after last season. It's simple math. Both of those things turned out to be true, because neither player has scored at the clip that they were scoring at previously. And I think that's a big part of why the Red Wings have slowed down. That line with Kane, Larkin, and DeBrincat was prolific for a long period of time. And now it's dried up and they don't have anything else to keep them up.
Well, the funny thing is Kane has still, like, listen, we know that Patrick Kane is a good hockey player, but coming off of like double hip surgery or hip resurfacing surgery, which is like the if you
Ed Jovanovski, Nick Backstrom surgery,
it's just horrific. Like they scrape stuff off. Oh no, thank
you. It's worse than a hip replacement.
Yeah, and he's been phenomenal. He's still being phenomenal given his age and his injury history, but it just hasn't been enough. Like the Red Wings are they're floundering, and it was a perfect opportunity for the Sabres to come in there and just sort of catch them while they're down, earn a crucial two. That would be a 4-point weekend for them, like, or potentially an 8-point weekend for them.
It sucks that it was in a back-to-back situation.
Yes, exactly. However, it's a shame. So are you saying that I want you to say it right now, because it's like we said, March 18th, there's about a month left, almost exactly a month left, left in the regular season. Are the Buffalo Sabres in the playoffs or not?
Oh, I'm not saying they are or they aren't. I'm saying that it's between them and the Islanders.
I'm forcing you to say right now.
Well, I'm not going to do it. So sucks to suck, doesn't it?
Great. Well, you try and get some good content going. And I'm gonna go out on a limb. I'm gonna try and salvage my horrible early season picks made. And I'm gonna say yes, they will make the playoffs. The Sabres will sneak in there.
I would not want to play them if they got in, though.
No,
if you have to go on a run similar to like other teams, like remember the year LA won their first cup?
Yes,
they had to go on that incredible run to get in, and then
they were the eighth seed.
Yeah, like, and they just absolutely mashed everyone in their way. Like I think when you're playing playoff hockey and you're used to the do or die situation on a daily basis, you're in a better headspace come playoff time.
You're in fight or flight mode, like for basically 5 straight months. Like it's crazy. Also, like another team that's like that we had at the start of the year is Nashville, where it's like, listen, I don't know if they have the juice to make the playoffs, but if they make the playoffs, that is going to be a pain in the ass team to play.
It's looking like the two wild card spots are going to be Nashville and Vegas.
Yeah, which
is like, LOL. Like if I'm in Vancouver right now, I'm not happy about that.
I'm quaking in my boots, especially because
I don't think any team wants to see Vegas in the first round.
But I'm saying even Nashville, like I would hate to play in a 7-game series because UC Saros can go.
It's a tough building to play in.
You think about like the sort of the three pillars of what makes a great playoff opponent. It's tough building to play in. It's goalie who could go on like a superhuman run at any level or at any moment, which is UC Saros, and it's team of absolute shitheads that just grind you down where you go, anytime you go, you look at the corner, you go, oh God, I got to go in there. And that's all that's basically all what Nashville is. You want to play Ryan O'Reilly in a playoff series?
Nope.
Luke Shen in a playoff series, like all this kind of, not great.
And that's before we get to Roman Josi.
That's before we get to like Roman Josi and Philip Forsberg and all those guys. And then also UC Saros, like he's consistently been one of the best goalies in the league for his entire career. And he's had a bit of a down year this year, except he's really picked it up.
And now he's still at a 9-10.
Exactly. He was at a 9-0-4 before, but now he's at a 9-10.
It's amazing that that's a down year for him, because that's like better than league average.
That's like, at this point, that's like 15 points better than league average. Like league average is like 8-9-5 or something this year. It's
bad.
But like, and then you have that building. Like, yeah, I think the Sabres and the Preds, like if they are able to squeak in, they're gonna give some teams a run for their money.
I'd love to see the Sabres arena in the playoffs. I was there when they played Ottawa all those years ago. It was one of the most incredible atmospheres. I would love to see the Sabres in the playoffs. We might have to wait until next year, but if they go on some type of magical run to get in this season, that place is going to be rocking.
It's going to be nuts. All right. The NHLPA and the NHL reached a settlement over the Corey Perry situation. Let's touch on this briefly. Basically, they came to a conclusion that no grievance was filed because Perry actually didn't want to file a grievance, is what he said. He believes that the Blackhawks handled the situation fine based on what did or did not transpire. Like, again, it's been very cagey, but what actually happened. What will happen is that the Blackhawks have been issued a $1.99 million cap penalty through the rest of the season, which doesn't matter because they
are under the cap anyways.
They're way under the cap. There's no more transactions really be made, and it's not like they're loading up for the playoffs, so it doesn't matter. But at least this, we're able to put this behind us.
I understand why the PA did it, but I think it's stupid. If the player doesn't want to file it, then he shouldn't be forced into being a pawn in your little argument. He doesn't want to file it. Too bad. in the same way that, like, you might not like the results of a suspension, but if the player doesn't want to appeal it,
yeah,
too bad.
It's the whole
that I don't like. I don't like that they forced him into participating in this, in the sense of, like, if he said I'm not, like, doing it, there's no cap charge, there's nothing. But the PA was like, well, precedent this, yeah, and precedent that. I don't think somebody should be used it as a pawn in a precedent setting scenario is my
yes
take on
definitely
it.
However, I also think, you know, okay, it's tough to sort of talk about this because so many of the details haven't been made public, but, like, clearly Corey Perry did something wrong here.
Well, yeah, if he's not even fighting it.
And I think that if you did something wrong, maybe tough shit, maybe don't let your, like, he probably went, I don't want to file a grievance or whatever, but, like, you did something wrong and now your action is going to be used to potentially set a dangerous precedent for teams to just cut guys willy-nilly. Like, I'd rather them go through the course of sort of actions here, like the sort of the normal discourse, and come to this agreement. So at least we can look back on it where teams can go, like, where teams can't go, well, look what Corey Perry did. You didn't even file a grievance. So, like, what's the big deal? You know, I'd rather that. Like, I just don't think Corey Perry should have a ton of say in this, considering that he did something wrong. And, like, these are, like, you shouldn't, just because you don't want to pursue it, shouldn't ruin it for the next person. It's my, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, there's a legal response to that, which is the complainant in this case, Perry,
yeah,
chose not to,
yeah,
pursue
and
litigation.
You're, and that's
so
fine.
What the
or
league could do is, it's actually very easy. It's called a dismissed, yeah, without prejudice. So basically, they would say this scenario is not allowed to be used in future references against it. That's all they would have had to have done.
But they, yeah.
And that's why I'm like, Marty Walsh, like, you know what dismissed without prejudice, yeah, but, is. But, you worked in the White House.
But Marty Walsh is coming in here guns blazing. He's not letting anything in. And for better or worse, it would be nice if they were able to use the sort of dismissed without prejudice, but whatever. Anyway, it's behind us. We don't have to talk about this anymore. And the Oilers are not going to win the cup anyway, so who cares? All right. Wayne Simmons.
No, but I do want an Oilers-Avs playoff series.
Great.
That's
my
Western
Conference.
And
I want to watch the Oilers get absolutely fucking stomped.
But I want an Oilers-Avs playoff series because that game on Saturday night was one of the best games of the season.
It was great, and I hope that they lose every game 1,000-1.
Nope. I hope it goes 7 games.
Yeah.
I want as many games as possible of that.
I hope in that 7th game they lose 1,000-1. All right. Wayne Simmons has retired. We knew that this was coming. He didn't officially retire. Like, he said he'd stepped away, but he didn't officially file his paperwork. Now it seems like he has. He is signing a one-day contract with the Flyers to retire, and then they will honor his career in April, which is just a great sort of thing to do. But he retires with over 1,000 games played, 1,037 games. He hit that 1,000th with his hometown Leafs, which is nice. 263 goals and 263 assists. Interesting. Symmetry. We love it. For 526 points. And he also, interestingly, was the first non-captain to win the Marc Messier Paragon of Leadership Award.
There you go.
And I'm sure all the voters were in Vancouver, because I'm sure they think that Marc Messier is the Paragon of Leadership there. But yeah, look, Wayne, he was like literally the best guy to talk to. I would always make a beeline for him in the Leafs room whenever he was there and made available, because he would give you the best answers. People loved him too. Like, I remember it was the end of last season and it was right before the playoffs. It was like one of those, it was like the Jet Alexander game ahead of where the Leafs put Jet Alexander in against the Habs. So it was literally game 82. There was just nothing left for them to play for. And I was struggling for something to write. And I ended up writing something about Wayne Simmons. And that was like, out of the whole season, I'm pretty sure that was like my most read, or one of my most read stories, with like, I think it was like 200,000 views or something. Like, it was crazy. And I just went like, man, people love Wayne Simmons. They just love him. And it's easy to love Wayne Simmons. He's a great dude.
Like, hats off to him. He's done a ton in the community, done a ton in terms of moving the game forward in... Always somebody that treated media well. He's going to stay involved in the game. Like, he helps with Anthony Stewart's Minor Hockey Association out in Scarborough, which is where he's from. I'm from Scarborough. Like, I think his work with the Hockey Diversity Alliance, there's just so much more than the hockey player with Wayne Simmons, that his impact is going to have, like, it's going to last far beyond him retiring here. Yeah. And even some of the best players ever, like, you can't say that they had that impact on, let's say, like a marginalized community really mm-hmm. kind of coming in and loving the game. And so I think that's really important. I'm really looking forward to see what he's going to do. He was absolutely fantastic on Trade Center.
Oh, yeah.
He was incredible. I think he could be a guy who appears on NHL Network, similar to, like, less analytics type vibe, but more like a Frankie Corrado. I think him and Frankie could,
oh, yeah.
I'd listen to a podcast with those two, 100%.
Absolutely. No, they'd be great. They never actually played together, which is a shame. But then again, Frankie Corrado never really played, to be honest. But look, Wayne Simmonds, like, you, what I'll say about him before we move on to our next topic is just, like, I've never seen a guy who was so in the middle of, like, every scrum be, like, so, I don't want to say, like, beloved, but just, like, not hated. Like, because think about it. Like, he was in the middle of those, like, Pens, Flyers, crazy playoff series, like when the
Kings,
like,
Sharks,
yeah, Kings, Sharks, like all that. And yet I bet he would shake the hand of anyone there and they'd all have nothing but nice things to say about him as a person. You'd very rarely see that.
It's crazy. Like, he was in Flyers, Pens, Kings, Sharks, Leafs, Habs.
Yeah,
he was in all three of those rivalries that are heated.
And I'm sure everyone on both sides has nothing good to say about him, whereas, like, I remember, you know, the infamous interview of Sidney Crosby being asked about Claude Giroux and just going, like, I don't like him.
Yeah, just, like, straight up, like, I don't like him. I don't like any guy on their team.
Yeah. So that's great. Good for Wayne. I hope, you know, the world's your oyster when it comes to what you want to do after retirement. You played over 1,000 games as a guy who had to scrape every penny together as a kid to play team sports, like, to play AAA or AA and all that. Like, it's what a story. Great guy. So we love it. Congrats on a great career. All right. I'm so, so sick and tired of talking about the Arizona Coyotes, especially when it comes to land development. I didn't know that
I really just put this in here to piss him off.
Yeah, I didn't know that we were a architectural podcast. We're a
property management firm.
We are a property management firm, and I guess I got to get used to that at this point. But
yeah.
But it's at least, I don't think any tenant can be as annoying as the Arizona Coyotes, because boy, oh boy, here they are. They're going to auction for land. And this is basically the line in the sand.
Yeah. So
desert pun intended, but
exactly.
Like, this is essentially, so what it does is the Arizona State Land Department Board of Appeals. Cannot fucking believe we're talking about the Arizona State Land Department Board of Appeals on the Staff and Graph podcast. This is a hockey podcast, but okay. So the Arizona State Land Department Board of Appeals, the ASLDBA, the Asseldba approved the $68.5 million appraisal for a plot of land in Phoenix where the Coyotes have identified and will hope to build a new arena. But basically, if they do not win this auction, and it's, keep in mind, it is an auction.
It's literally an auction.
So anyone can come be like, 400 from the back, it's going for sale.
$76. You know who could auction that off? My sister. I've never heard somebody speak so fast in my life.
She speaks like freaking Busta Rhymes. It's crazy. But yeah, so if the Coyotes don't win this auction, and this is the first time this is being reported by mainstream media outlets, because,
like, Elliot reported this on Hockey Night in Canada.
So this is legit. This isn't, you know, like people being like, oh, well, at this point, like they're definitely got to be relocated. This is like, now there's no speculation. This is based in facts. Basically, if the Coyotes don't win this auction, they're done.
Yeah. Relocation is on the table.
Exactly. And it hasn't been on the table. It's been under the table. It's been in the room next to the table.
It's been in a box underneath
the table. It's been in the pocket of someone who's sitting at the table, but it hasn't been placed on the table. And if they don't win this auction, keep in mind, everyone thought that they were going to win that vote in Tempe.
And they got smashed.
Everyone thought there was a victory party set up out there. Like there was a palpable sense of optimism. The GM was canvassing door to door like your friggin' member of parliament. Like it was crazy. So this is
a little weird that you're more likely in Arizona to have Bill Armstrong knock on your door than Joe Biden, and it's an election year.
It's crazy. But it also, like it's insane how a franchise in one of the four major North American sports leagues, their fate, their fate as a franchise where they are comes down is in the hands of an auction, of a land auction.
I honestly, like, you say big four and it's like, yes, but like,
but not any, no,
but here's the thing. I'm not sure that the NHL is one of the big four anymore. MLS has passed taken. Them.
Yeah.
And, you can disagree with me all you want. The revenue would say otherwise. And also Lionel Messi.
So
like,
it's
not the same thing. But I think you make a great point in the sense that, like, this is a major league team because it's probably the big five now instead of the big four. We're talking about one of the major leagues in North America.
A billion-dollar industry. Like a billion
multi-billion dollar industry having a team that doesn't have a place to play.
And, but like, then, like, the fate of them in one of the
premier markets in the United States,
like, in one of the biggest media markets in the on the continent, and it's now left in the hands of a state land auction,
which is happening in June.
Yeah,
and my guess is if that does not go through, then the Board of Governors meeting that happens in July is going to be a very interesting one.
Do you think Morello, when he's showing up to the governor's meeting, is his key card going to get declined like that guy at Jets training camp?
That would be funny.
Yeah, because this is insane. Like, I know we talk about, we're forced to talk about it all the time, but
no, it's legit ridiculous.
We're talking about the Arizona State Land Department Board of Appeals.
I don't even know what that they do. I don't care either.
They appraise land and set it up for auction, I guess. Like, it's like, that's what they've done here is they I don't know. The state is, like, owns pieces of land people want to bid on, so they get an appraiser out there to appraise how much it actually is going to be worth. They calculate the starting bid and then they send it out to auction, and that's it.
I'm so tired of this. Like, can we just get an owner in there that can afford to, like, build an arena and, like,
can afford to pay for the napkins?
Yeah, like, honestly, as much as I think having a team in Utah is a genuinely horrendous idea,
you do?
Yeah.
Why?
There are many reasons, and a lot of them...
It's because no one drinks there, and players are
not going to get into. I think moving out of the greater Phoenix area is a bad idea from a market standpoint.
Absolutely.
Phoenix. You need to have an owner that is willing to keep them there, and is also, like, has a track record. Frankly, you need somebody like Mark Cuban. Like, somebody with that amount of wealth, with that track record...
Yeah.
To be, like, Ottawa's going to probably get a pretty good deal because Michael Andlauer is heading it up, not Eugene Melnyk, right? So you need somebody that has that clout to come in and be the guy.
You need, like, and you need a guy who doesn't care, like, who just wants to be able to say that he owns a team and doesn't really care if he makes money on it or not. Like, I think about, like, you need, like, a Steve Cohen with the Mets. Like, the guy is, like, a Mets fan. And he has more money than he can possibly ever spend. So he's like, I'm going to buy the Mets and, you know, and basically use them as my fantasy team. And let's go. Like, you need someone like that.
Or you could almost. And then there's, like, the opposite, which is true, which is what's happening with Manchester United, which is Sir Jim Ratcliffe is, like, one of the richest people in England.
Yeah.
And he's a huge Man U guy. And the Glazers, who are American, were fucking up Manchester United to the point where, like, fans were, like, chanting for them to sell the team and, like, booed them when they showed up to the game. This guy comes in and he only cares about improving the club. He's great. Like, I'm, like, he announced an Old Trafford, like, renovation the third day he owned the team.
Great.
Right? He's like, no, we're dedicating to this. We're dedicating. So when you actually have somebody who has enough money that says, I care about the team, and so we're going to do whatever it takes, whatever money I need to use to make sure that this team is successful here, that's the type of person you need.
100%.
Now, is there anyone... Manchester United is a lot different
than the Arizona Coyotes.
I don't think anyone is that passionate about the Coyotes.
No.
And I don't think, realistically, I don't think there's anyone that passionate about, like, any NHL team as... Like, it's a different beast in England when it comes to, like, United, Liverpool, Arsenal. Like, that's just a different level of psychosis. Yeah, so, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, no one's, like, lighting off road flares in NHL arenas because, like, they got pissed over an icing call and stuff like that. Like,
there are guys that are that have announced that they're being fired at the end of the year and they're still in the running for a championship.
Yeah.
Like, that's how cutthroat it is. These people in Canada and the US have no idea. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys are is crazy to me.
Yeah, it's nuts. All right, well, Rach, let's get into our CanTorque deep dive. CanTorque makes rugged, hardworking industrial torque tools for heavy equipment operators around the world. They are proudly Canadian and manufacture everything out of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada for heavy industry around the world. Their new website tells their story 20 years in the making. Visit CanTorque.com today and ask Colin for more details. Rachel, I don't know about you. It's been a long season, a long year. I'm a little fatigued.
I'm generally tired. You know what I'm tired of, Mike?
What are you tired of?
Your shit. No, I'm kidding.
I was gonna say, yeah, I get it. I get it. Everyone eventually is. No, I'm fatigued, and I find that when I'm fatigued, Rachel, from a long, grueling sort of process, my body is more susceptible to, you know, to getting nicked up a little bit, to tears, to strains. And boy, that sure is applicable in the NHL, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you and I offline have many a discussion about how
about health.
I don't take care of myself and why I get sick. Mm-hmm. And you're like, because you haven't slept in 2 days. That's why.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good. I actually did a ton of. I took 4 courses on this during my master's while I was in school.
Mm-hmm.
And because I own the rights to all my research and my education, we can talk about it unfettered.
Hey, cool, let's do it.
And so, yeah, like, we've noticed, last week we teased it a bit. We noticed that
people are dropping like flies.
Yeah, they're dropping like flies. And then we went back and looked at other seasons. And a lot of times, it's the mid-February to mid-March timeframe, that month, where you have a bit more of a condensed schedule because you're coming off of All-Star bye week. You got to cram all the games in. We notice guys specifically that play a lot. So like your higher end guys are getting hurt more.
Oh, yeah.
So we wanted to look into why that is. So we went and got Mike went and got all the injuries. I went and read a bunch of academic papers because I have nothing else to do on a weekend. Mm-hmm. And we figured we'd talk about it and kind of like provide some insight on like the different types of injuries. What I will say is what you're going to notice here is there are no broken bone injuries.
Yes, because that's a fluke. That can happen whenever. But like these are muscular.
Yeah, there's no concussions because you can't, when you get chicken winged in the head, like you're going to get a concussion whether you're tired or not. So these are like muscular ligaments, tendons, like basically injuries that are caused from intense active loading and overstrain.
Yeah. So, I mean, right off the hop, let's rattle off some injuries that have happened from this sort of basically from late February to now, which is mid-March, which is Thatcher Demko out for a while with knee, potentially some hip surgery in there as well.
No. He had hip surgery.
Oh, he had some hip surgery.
So he has an injury history. So yes. He's had hip surgery that he's missed
a ton
of time
for. But his knee is keeping
him
out right now, and we don't know when he's coming back. Like,
and
it's
that's
scary.
Related. So yeah. I put hip in there just because hips, knees, and back are all related. So if you have a hip injury, you end up compensating with your knees and your back. If you have a knee injury, you end up compensating with your hips.
I know.
And your groin.
I know.
And so when you already have had bad hips, you're more susceptible to knee injuries. So when you play too much, like Thatcher Demko has, lo and behold, you have a knee injury.
And then another goalie, obviously, Jacob Markstrom, lower body. We don't know like if it's a knee or if it's a groin, but it is lower body. Barrett Hayton, lower body. Vince Dunn, upper body. It's a result of a hit, so it's a bit different. But it would be, you know, there's a good, and as we'll get into it, if he takes this hit on the first or second game of the year, it's likely that he absorbs it better or his body reacts to it a bit better than it does now after being beaten down for 60 games. You know, Aaron Ekblad, lower body, he's out for a while. Mitch Marner has a high ankle sprain, which is rough. Like, that is like the most annoying lingering. If you try and play through a high ankle sprain, you're not the same player that you are. No matter how much time you sort of take off, it's basically you have to wait until next season.
If I'm the Leafs, I don't want to see Mitch Marner till game one.
Yeah.
Which is, it's funny that injury happened the day after the trade deadline because they could have said high ankle sprain, 8 weeks, see you for round one.
Like LTIR, retroactive, whenever, and then boom. Tyler Seguin, lower body, it's a lingering one.
That's always a muscle. Anything that's lingering is a muscle.
Yeah, I mean,
hot tip.
A broken bone doesn't linger. It just happens. And then literally everyone on the Blue Jackets, I like to say, they have so many guys on who are injured right now on the shelf, but Chinnikov and Boqvist are both upper body, and those are lingering as well. So those aren't broken bones. That is muscular. And then also Sean Corrali, lower body. Obviously, Adam Fantilli gets a skate cut.
That's a fluke.
You know, Patrick Laine is out for personal reasons, stuff like that. Jacob Trouba, lower body. But this one went from a day-to-day initially to when they did further testing on it. It's now a 2 to 3 week timeline.
That's a muscle.
Which is muscle and also very concerning. You also got Blake Wheeler. He got hit, fell awkwardly on his leg, which looks like to be a knee, and he's out for what could potentially be
he's out for the rest of the year, they said.
Well, they said that he's out for the rest of the season, and like they wouldn't rule out a late playoff return for him, but like there's a chance that this is just it for him. Like,
yeah.
Because he's old. And then obviously Josh Norris re-injuring his shoulder after multiple surgeries. We'll talk about that as well. Players are dropping like flies. These are important players, most of them on playoff bound teams. And all of these guys, these are not bit players. These are guys who log, you know, top six, top four or goaltending workload minutes.
Yeah. Like let's go through them rapid fire.
Sure.
How many playoff series do the Canucks win without Thatcher Demko?
Zero.
Okay. How many, if they were in the playoff series, would they win without Jacob Markstrom, Calgary?
Maybe Dustin Wolf goes on a run, but I would say zero.
Cool. Barrett Hayton was...
He was great.
Really having a season. Yeah. They increased his minutes, and he got hurt. He's had shoulder issues before. Yeah. So this seems like there's a pattern for Barrett Hayton, Thatcher Demko as well, where when they play over a certain... They play over their threshold, and we're going to get to how that's measured in a second.
Yeah.
It seems like they're prone to injuries because Hayton's was completely innocuous. Like, it just, off you go, see you later. Aaron Ekblad collided with Vladimir Tarasenko.
Yeah.
But then again, is he maybe better positioned? Is he stronger on his skates to absorb that hit? He's skating in a tracksuit currently, which I think we can all agree that, like, we would prefer to watch hockey when everyone's healthy, because that's when you're getting the best amount of like quality. But here we are, you jam so many games because you want to give guys a bye week, and
here we go.
We're getting hurt, right? So Mitch Marner, high ankle sprain. When I was in New Jersey, Ray was the GM, and he was in Pittsburgh when Fleury had the high ankle sprain. And I remember asking, because we had a player with a high ankle sprain at the time. And I was like, what does that entail? Because there's not a ton of research on it. Like, I can go back and look, but like, what's your experience with Fleury? And he said Fleury was severe, which Marner's isn't. It's a grade one, which is like almost, they stopped him early. But Fleury's, I believe, was a grade three. And Ray said he wasn't the same for almost 18 months. Like, that's the level of muscular injury here, because when you're talking about a high ankle sprain, you're talking about your Achilles, you're talking about potential for plantar fasciitis. Like, there's just the way the muscles and the tissues connect in your ankle. If you have a high ankle sprain, there are so many more that are involved there. You've got your calf that's involved. It's just, it gets very ugly very quickly.
Yeah.
And so without Marner, the Leafs are not beating Boston or Florida. Zero chance, not happening.
I don't know if they're beating him with him either.
Exactly.
How are they going to replace his zero goals in those playoff series? It's going to be crazy.
Tyler Seguin that's a loss for Dallas, who's contending.
But also, Tyler Seguin has miles on his body. Tyler Seguin has hips. Tyler Seguin
has
back and groin. Basically, the guy is more machine than man at this point. And it is. So that's really going to weigh on him. It doesn't really matter with the Blue Jackets because they're way out of it. And
right. The Josh Norris one is
tough.
Is the big one.
Like, how does that impact the rest of his career?
Exactly. Yeah. And this is where, so I went and looked at some studies, a lot of systematic reviews, which basically means that they're reading individual studies and taking the results from them, weighing them against each other and coming up with results of over thousands of studies. So like, I read four systematic reviews that went over, I believe it was like 9,000 studies. So like, we're taking a lot into account here. And when it comes to the shoulder injuries that Norris has, once you have one rotator cuff repair, It's not that you're more susceptible. It's when you have impact, which is what hockey players do.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't, because it's not the same structure, you are more prone to tearing the repair.
Yeah.
So if I go in for rotator cuff surgery, which I will be at some point, I'm not going to be a risk to re-tear my shoulder because I'm not getting body checked immediately afterwards. Whereas Josh Norris has had, there's shoulder subluxation, there's shoulder decompression, there's shoulder rotator cuff tear. Any one of those injuries, far more easy to re-aggravate when you're taking body contact. Mm. And so I think you can go in and reattach it, but then your mobility and your strength in your shoulder, specifically in your deltoid, which is the muscle on the top of your shoulder, significantly decreases when you've had two of those surgeries. I believe he's about to have his third. Like, this is, he's getting pretty close to like potentially having a dead arm, which is crazy.
Like, is he gonna be able to play again? Like, he's going to, but like,
I think what you're gonna see is like a lot of times, and I remember being in one of my classes, which was on, like ball and socket injuries, mm-hmm. like muscular injuries. So your hips and your shoulders. And I remember my professor saying, like, if the prognosis says you can play in 6 months, take 8.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times with your ball and socket joints, they might feel recovered because you've had mobility and you have that strength, but not everything has kind of grown back and tethered in properly. And so you want to be able to give your body just that extra little bit of time to fully strengthen that shoulder, mm-hmm. so that you are able to take impact. So a lot of like the athletes that he works with, he says, I give them a timeline and I tell them to tack between 10 and 15% on top if you want to mitigate the risk of re-injury. And I think Norris hasn't done that.
No, he hasn't. And
like, I get it, because you're an NHL player, but like at the same time, when you're about to have your second or third surgery, like maybe wait.
Like, if this happens again to him,
he's done.
Yeah.
So, he's going to have a dead arm.
I don't know how you, I'm not a doctor. I don't know how you approach the rest of his career like this. Like, because basically every time you step on the ice, you're risking a career ender. I don't know. Every player kind of does that, I guess. But like, especially with his shoulder, like, you're a forward.
Look at the difference between how Josh Norris has handled his shoulder and Gabe Landeskog has handled his knee.
Oh, Gabe Landeskog has taken, like,
there's going to be like, he may or may not come back for the playoffs. We don't know. Mm-hmm. But at a minimum, he's taking a year off.
Yeah.
Like a year. And it might be 18 months. He might not play until next season. And when he went into this, we didn't know if he was ever going to play again, because that is
it's 2 years he's taking off, because he didn't play after June of 2022. So it's 2 years.
He played last season, didn't he?
No,
he didn't.
No,
okay, he didn't play at all last season. 2 years.
Yeah.
Time is a social construct.
Yeah, it is.
But you look at the time he's taking. Nobody's rushing back. Nobody's like, you can't mess around.
And he's had some false starts. Like, it looked like he was going to be able to return potentially for the playoffs last year, but they clearly did they clearly charted the progress, met and went like, listen, maybe you could if you wanted to, but
right, you could push the envelope.
You can push the envelope, but we'd rather, if you want to play 6-7 more years in the NHL, because you're what, 32, like you have time left. Maybe take some extra time. He took an extra year. So if he's ready, that's great. But like Norris, like,
take that, like, don't come back. I know they were saying, oh, he's going to be ready for training camp. That's great. No contact until November.
Yeah. Like, if he's at training camp, let him skate or whatever. Yeah. But don't let him take a hit until
no contact.
Yeah. Like, I would say,
literally don't take a hit for 8 months.
Yeah. I would say,
and also this means no wakeboarding in the summer.
Yes.
No.
Okay. Mark Mathot.
Like, this is the other, say. But no, I don't care if you want to go on vacation, do your thing.
Oh, I know.
Do not do things that could cause your injury to get worse. Yeah.
Like, I just finished the most recent season of Drive to Survive, like F1, And the most annoying thing in the world was the whole first episode is centered around Aston Martin and Lawrence and Lance Stroll. And it's like, yeah, he's in for a big year. He put so much money into these cars. They're going to be great. And then Lance, like the kid who's in the car, he's going to be like, yeah, I'm going to go mountain biking. And so he goes mountain biking the day before the first race. And he breaks his toe and he breaks his finger, I think. And like, I'm just like, how on earth did you let your kid and also like your top driver go fucking mountain biking the week before the race?
Like I don't know what the rules are for other teams, but like at Bayern Munich, you cannot do activities.
You have to have that in your contract.
It's in the contract. So like when Neuer broke his leg, like shattered his leg skiing, they thought he was downhill skiing and they were like, well, we're not paying you. No. This man was literally cross-country skiing, and there was an issue with, like, the path that caused his skis to, like, and that ended up breaking his leg. So it wasn't that he was, like, going downhill in the Alps kind of thing. But there are absolutely, like, I think in hockey, there are...
There's definitely clauses in the contracts.
You can't go skydiving.
Yeah.
Things like that. But, like... there's nothing in there that says, like, you can't wakeboard. And, like, I've seen some of these guys wakeboard, whether it's in, like, Cape Cod or in Muskoka. Like, I've seen Connor McDavid do a backflip. Mm. I'm like, imagine if Connor McDavid...
falls wrong.
...screws something up because he was wakeboarding at his cottage in the summer.
Just stop doing it. You write a year off for your franchise and potentially, like, if
and you're supposed to be resting?
Yeah.
Once again, we're talking about fatigue. You're supposed to be resting. Last time I checked, wakeboarding does not constitute as resting.
Yeah. So we got to figure that out. Anything else you want to add to the industry?
Yeah, like I think just diving deeper into like how this works. So it's like basically the reason a lot of these guys are getting hurt is because physical fatigue or physical injuries, so like your muscle strains, less bone breaks, obviously, but like muscle strains, ligament tears, things like that, have been directly linked to overtraining, overuse. Mm-hmm. Whereas, so what was interesting is the systematic review found that there was no measurable decline in cognitive performance. So you know how like commentators will say, oh, that's a tired mistake.
Mm-hmm.
There is actually like within the context of a shift, there might be, but over the course of a season, there has zero in 5,000 studies, zero link. So I'm like, okay, I'm not buying that then. But there has been full links to physical injury from physical fatigue. And so you've got that. Then you've got like your muscles when they're subjected to strain, right? So like when you used to go running every day, and I would tell you that's bad for your knee, right? What happens is like when you're at 100%, your muscle's ability to take up energy from the blood is significantly higher. And so when you are running, you need that energy. Your muscles stretch and move as you stretch and move. The more energy that your muscles are able to take up, the more easily your muscles are able to stretch and move. As you tire out, your muscles aren't able to take up the same amount of energy. And so it takes less time for your muscles to reach the point of strain than if they were able to take up the same amount of energy. So like if your muscles are only taking up like 60% of available energy because you're fatigued, which is a lot of what's happening right now in the NHL, it's going to take them, like they're going to get injured 40% faster.
Yeah.
Because that's just like how it works. And the easiest injuries to re-aggravate, easily muscle injuries, obviously, shoulders, hips, groins, back, like lower back. Because anything in your, like, pelvic area, basically, as a hockey player, is asking for trouble. Because a lot of what you're doing, like, a stride is an unnatural movement. Goaltending, don't even get me started on. Like, that's just completely unnatural. But a lot of it, like, when you think about it, when you hurt your knee, you were compensating for it, and then your hips started hurting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And when your hips started hurting, then your back starts hurting. Then your groin starts hurting. And when you fatigue those muscles, you're more likely to get hurt, which is what happened, isn't it?
I don't think so. No. Like, it's more, well, with me, like
your knee didn't get better.
No.
Like.
Yeah. it's not great. Like, but also like the human body is such an intricate, like if you have a jaw problem, that can manifest in like hip problems just by the Rube Goldberg machine of how your body compensates.
The teeth thing.
Yeah.
Like there was a soccer player, I'm not going to name him, but like he was having all of these like weird injuries and they couldn't figure out why. Turns out he had a cavity. And then all of a sudden, because it's fucking bacteria, right? It's bacteria going directly into his bloodstream. It has the root canal. Everything literally hasn't been hurt since. And I'm like, are you serious? The mouth is like weird. Mouth and gut from a bacteria perspective, yeah. Huge thing. There is one thing that the NHL isn't doing that I think they need to. They need to follow in the footsteps of soccer. And I believe the NFL is doing it this year.
Okay.
It's called Zone 7. So Zone 7 is a data performance tracker whose sole responsibility and goal is to mitigate injury risk.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like something that you would want to have.
Definitely.
Right? And before anyone's like, oh, well, it's new technology, it's used by Liverpool and Napoli and the English national team and the German national team and Aberdeen and LAFC, who just won MLS Cup. It's been piloted in the Champions League. All of those things make far more money than anything the NHL has ever seen. So if they're using it as a way to prevent injuries, it's not something that can be used. And what differs from Zone 7 to like Catapult, let's say. Catapult is like performance tracking and they can use like metrics. And that's not in the CBA because they're like, well, what if you use it in contracts?
Yes. Yeah.
This is not that. This is specifically, it measures your body and it tells the team's medical staff when you are at risk for an injury. Yeah. It's not, that has nothing to do with your contract, right? It doesn't give any value to what you are as a player. Well, hey, like that.
A team could be like, this guy's always at risk. Like, so we won't pay him as much. We won't commit as many years to him or something.
Yeah. So I'm going to read some of the important stuff from here. So basically what it came out with was the fact that when they did the pilot test on the Champions League team, which is 24 players who were part of like the first team squad, on average, 22 players got analyzed a day, whether it was like training, game, or whatever. And there was an average of 3 risk alerts per day. This particular team saw the least amount of injuries in the Champions League that season out of every team that was in there. Then you go to the retrospective analysis. So once they get all the data done, once they do like everything, the Zone 7 injury risk forecasting platform detected 18 of the 25 extremity injuries in advance. This is 72% hit rate. So if you can identify 72% early, imagine how many injuries you could prevent. Because
that'd be
as
amazing.
Soon as that risk alert comes up, bang, that guy's got to take a day off. That guy's got to have a maintenance day. We need to pay close attention to this, like that kind of thing. Where it gets even crazier. So not only have we identified this early in 72% of cases, the length of the absences caused by the injuries that ended up happening in the analysis accounted for 387 of 534 man days lost. So they recognized over 70% of the basically man games lost that their players were able to kind of come up with. Like, that is extraordinarily accurate. Imagine if you could, and it's very similar to the Catapult in terms of like what you have to wear, but it serves a completely different purpose. Mm-hmm. And it's like, imagine if I could come to you while you, Mike Stevens, are on your hot boy walks.
Okay.
Right? And I go, hey, you need to take a day off today. And you're like, why?
I go, no.
Because your Zone 7 showed me that if you continue with this strain, you'll likely tear your ACL in the next 2 days. You would probably stop.
Probably.
You would probably take a day off, right?
I wouldn't be happy about it, but I would. Yeah.
Exactly. Or it's you're wearing this thing in the run of play and like you can see a guy who's been like sprinting up and down the field or in hockey, like a defenseman who's playing like 22 minutes. Right? Barrett Hayton, great example.
Yeah.
Right? He starts to play more. Thatcher Demko, he starts to play more. If you had Zone 7, you would be able to see, hey, this guy's his markers are showing up and he might get hurt.
Give him a week off.
Hey, Rick Tocchet, Casey DeSmith has to play at some point. Can't play 11 and 13. Hey, Andre Tourigny, Barrett Hayton needs a couple days off. Like, preventative stuff as opposed to reactive stuff.
Because coaches aren't going to do that on their own. They ice the team they think is going to win them every game they can. And a lot of the time that means Barrett Hayton plays more. That means Thatcher Demko's in net. Like, you have to have the apparatus around the coaches to be able to tell them, hey, form the best lineup you can with these players, because these players are not available tonight.
Right. And I think, you know what, you make a great point. Yeah. Because, like, I know in soccer, it's not like this for every team, but I know a lot of the teams, it's basically like, these are the biomarkers, like the teams that use zone 7. And the doctors will actually say, he is not playing. So, like, when Erling Haaland didn't play a few games ago, everyone was like up in arms, and Pep was like, he's not injured, like, chill, but he's overworked.
Yeah.
What does that tell you? He's paying attention, and the doctors have said to him, he is not playing. Whereas here, you have doctors clearing guys with punctured lungs.
Yeah.
Like, that's the difference, is you need the doctors to say, like, that's enough. You're not playing as a preventative measure. They can't even get them to say you're not playing when we have, like, broken limbs. So I'm not entirely convinced, but at least if they used it, it would go a long way into saying, like, we're prepared for this. Or you tell the coach, hey, he's at risk of injury. You need to taper back a little bit. Kind of thing. I think it could at least inform the people involved so that either A, they're not surprised, or B, you can do preventative treatments, right? Even if you want this guy to play, maybe he's going in for acupuncture, massage, like he's going in before that, right? So he's starting to get treatment before the injury even occurs.
Yeah, that's perfect. All right, Rachel, well, I think that's the end of the podcast here. I hope you've learned something, our valued listeners and viewers. We'll be back on Thursday, but before that, subscribe to us on YouTube, on Twitch, follow us on TikTok, on Twitter, on Instagram. Make sure to donate to our charity of choice, Jumpstart. We love Jumpstart. Helps economically disadvantaged kids play team sports, which is a cause that is extremely near and dear to Rachel and I's hearts. All the resources are in the links in the description of this podcast. So definitely go do that. And we will be back on Thursday to talk more hockey. It'll be great. Stay tuned.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.